To Jenny's Uncensored Pennies, I am Jennifer Marie Martinez.
I am Adam Herrera.
And with us today is Beverly Lowry. We are going to speak to Beverly about raising kids while teaching kids. Beverly and I go way back. I've known her since middle school. We were in student council together in high school, in drama club. We graduated from that same high school. She is a single mom with three kids. And she's also the product of the same public school district that she teaches at. And more exciting than all of that, sorry, Bev, she will be making her debut as a children's book author later this year. So welcome, Beverly. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I got this idea to talk to you about what it's like, you know, raising kids while you're teaching kids, because that's a huge part of your life, right? You're a mom and you're a teacher. So I just kind of wanted to pick your brain about that. Like how, I guess, what made you decide to become a teacher, first of all?
So I guess it's probably sounds pretty cliche. I was a teacher. I honestly have wanted to be a teacher since I was a kid. My third grade teacher, Miss Escobedo, shout out. She also still works in the district. She's pretty high up. Or actually, this is her last year. She's retiring. But she was my third grade teacher, and it was her first class ever teaching. I was like her first class. And man, I loved her so much. Like, I was one of those kids that would, once I went up to like fourth grade and fifth grade, I would still come back and visit her and like visit her class and help her do things in her class and stuff. And so she just stuck with me, and she was the reason why I wanted to be a teacher. And I would even at home with my sisters, oh my God, you should have saw. Like my grandma would take us to yard sales and stuff. And all the things, this lady must have been a teacher at this particular yard sale one year. I got like great books and like all this cool teacher stuff from this yard sale, and I put it like at our house. Me and my sisters would play school, and I would even put up like brown paper bags. Like I would staple them to our walls. Oh my God!
So you're already making
I would kill my kids if they were stapling.
You were making your class board already, your bulletin board at home. Oh my God!
Yeah, because it was just brown paper bags. I would you know, cut them up and put them on the wall and use my chalk and like write on them and just everything. I had a grade book. I went all out, and I would ask my teachers for worksheets that we could use at home to play school with. It was a thing. So yeah, it's always been in my mind that I wanted to do.
Wow, that's amazing. And it sounds like that teacher clearly had a huge impact on you. Can you tell me specifically, like, do you know specifically like that moment as a child, like that just
inspired you? Like,
yeah.
What about her? Like, what qualities?
So look back on it, right? Because I wouldn't have been able to tell you this in the moment as a kid, right?
Not.
Like, you just don't have that cognitive ability. But looking back on it, I always think like, why was I so, you know, drawn to her? Why did I love her so much? Like, what did she give me? And of course, as teachers, right, where we learn, like, you got to build relationships with your students. And, you know, we learn all that behind the scenes stuff and the social emotional. And so now I'm like, that's what it was, because all the stuff I had going on at home, right? You know, I think I shared with you just the issues. Not that I had this horrible childhood or anything, because I didn't. Like, it was great. I wasn't lacking anything that I needed, but social emotional stuff, right? Like the attention and the, not that my parents didn't care for me. They did. They were there. I had my mom and dad, but they were alcoholics and stuff. So, you know, I had things that were going on at home, especially in the evening. And then I would get up and go to school, like if like these two separate lives, right? And I would go to school just not acknowledging my home life. And so school life was this way to get away. And I was myself, and I was Beverly, you know, not anything that was like happening at home. And so I think getting that, whatever it was that she was seeing in me, and like the attention she was giving me and pulling the best out of me, I think, like, for whatever it was, I thought she was pretty, lucky. And one of the things I remember about her, I guess she was bilingual, but she wasn't, I wasn't in the bilingual class, but she was bilingual. And I remember above her door, when you first walked, it said, bienvenidos. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at that, like, oh, wow. Like, she has a sign that says, I don't know why that, like, was a big deal to me, but it was. And so it just made her special. But now growing up, I'm like, it was what she gave me. It was her attention and her love and affection that I was feeling, I think, the most, that made me just drawn to her and want to be like her as
Wow. Yeah, I would have. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing about your home life too, and what that was like for you. And yeah, for me, school very much as like you, it was like, you know, the place where you saw your friends and the place where you had that teacher that was warm and gave you the attention and saw maybe that potential in you, saw how special you are. Right. And it made you carried with you. Wow. Like, that's where you went to show up as the special kid that you were. And, you know, wow. So yeah, you great. Like, I didn't know what answer to expect, but I love everything that you said.
Like, school was your home away from home.
Or like a safe.
It was definitely a home. And not to say that I wasn't able to be myself at home, because I was, but again, I mean, it's just, if you ever meet my dad, everybody's a moron. And you know, he's very, I was telling you about my son pounding on the desk. I always tell my son, when he does that sometimes, it gives me PTSD of my dad yelling. And because my son very much sounds like my dad when he is playing his video games and using that loud voice and stuff. And although he's playing and it isn't anything that I should be scared of, I'm not. But that look, like when he really sounds like my dad and has that pound, like he's pounding the dust and stuff, I'm like, right away, my PTSD just, I'm transformed into that me being a little kid at home. So,
like a trigger.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a trigger. And I've already, you know, had that conversation with my son. But so coming to school was, well, I'm not a moron. You know, I'm not stupid. I actually know something. And yeah, I felt smart at school. I felt funny at school. I felt like I had a lot of friends and just, yes, it was that safer space where I was loved and cared for. And not to say that school didn't have its problems, right? Like, of course I had people that made fun of me. I was always been overweight and whatever, but it was just something different. It was good to me.
Now, that carrying on into your adulthood, being a teacher, do you carry or do you practice a lot of like what your experiences were back when you were younger? Do you like practice those now, like in the classroom or with your children or, you know, in your everyday life?
So are you talking about
like the way
what I got?
Yeah, the way your teacher showed up for you, like, are you mindful of that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't.
Yeah, no, very mindful. I mean, and again, that's just one of the trainings, right? Like, we're constantly, as teachers, being told we teach the whole child and the social emotional aspects because we don't know what our kids are coming in with. We don't know what's happening at home ever. And so we always cross there's this line, right? Where we have to, especially nowadays and especially after COVID, teach kids a lot of social way, like how to behave socially, because it's for whatever reason not being taught at home, even in the great child, like great homes, right? Not every parent, I guess, is aware that you also need to teach your kids how to behave in public, right? But, and how to interact with each other and how to not take things personally. And so I'm constantly drawing that line of like being the teacher that whips them in shape and has them like, okay, well, this is not how you behave in school, or this is not how you act with your friends, or, you know, that has to be very like, put my foot down and quote unquote mean, right? But I'm also that teacher that's like, come talk to me,
Well, it's setting structure.
Yeah, definitely. Setting structure, having the routines, and then also, Miss Laurie loves y'all. Miss Laurie loves you. You know, constantly trying. And that's a hard thing for me to tell people I love them, because that wasn't something I heard growing up. And giving hugs wasn't something that I had growing up, but until school, right? You don't, like, we think about theater class and like Miss Adamy, how she would always, you know, bring in her God stuff, and God wasn't something I was having at home either. So yeah, it's a big deal. Like talking, I mean, even just recently, just this past week, I had some students breaking down and crying in my classroom, and we had to, do you want to talk about it? She said, no. I said, okay, everybody, let's go. Let's move on. Cause we were talking about, it was a trigger of things. One student had an issue because her mom's, I guess if I'm not saying her name, it's fine. Right. So, her mom's transitioning into a man. Okay. And so the class is very confused when this child talks about her mom or dad. She intertwines the two words. And so finally I said, do you just want to address it? Do you want to tell them? Mm-hmm. And then she said, you can tell them, you can address it. And so then I said, okay, hey, this is what's going on in this kid's life. And this is why you guys are confused and why she's, you know, mixing up the words. Everybody understood. We had a whole conversation, not again, swaying them any which way to believe, but just, I reiterated with, and everybody has the right to what they want to be. You know, as long as we treat each other with like love and respect and blah, 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 that whole conversation. Well, then another student broke down crying. Something I said, something that we talked about triggered her in her, what was going on with her life. And so then I asked her, did you want to talk about it? At first she said, no, I'm fine, I'll be okay. But she still stood there crying. And then she sucked it up and we went on and the class went on and I broke them off into their, you know, the activities they were doing and everything. And then a little later after recess, she comes and says, I want to talk about it now. So meet me outside. And we had a full on, you know, she explained the situation and it wasn't really anything bad, but to her, it's bothering her.
Right.
And situation with her mom and dad and their whole divorce and things, you know, separation. And yeah, so out in the hallway, I'm giving her a hug and I'm like, just know that both parents love you. You have them to talk to. Go talk to them. I know you feel like you can't, but you can. Like, they're going to love you. You're going to be okay. You always have me. And that's it. Like, I love you, you know, and we walked back into class because it's not, you know, something we can, like, I don't want them to live there either and all in their emotions, right? We got to learn how to balance that. But no, so I very much practice it for sure. Yeah. I try to be that for them.
Wow.
So your view of school as when you were a student of a certain age in school, you saw it as this, you know, safe space and whatnot. And it sounds like you're very much creating that same environment for the students that you come into contact with. And that's great. And so with all of that, how does that kind of spill into like your personal life and connection with your own children?
So for my kids, and just to kind of give you a little of the how everything began to be, right? Because like I said, I had always wanted to be a teacher. But, and then, you know, from school, how, man, I was like student body president and like the theater historian at the top 10% of my class. And I really worked my ass off and was involved in all these activities in high school because I was going to be that shining kid and I was going to make it and I was going to go to college and blah, 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 blah. Right. But then I got into college and 9/11 happened. And, you know, that's when I started experiencing panic attacks and stuff that I took time off of school. And then in that time off, I got pregnant and, you know, like life happened. So even though after I had my first son, I went back to school. And I took a few more classes, was on the dean's list, you know, like still trying to go forward. So, and then I had I got pregnant with my daughter. And so I was going to school while I was pregnant with her. And then once I had her, I took some time off. And then very quickly, so I had my two youngest ones a year and 4 months apart. So they're like Mexican twins. So that was very close. But once I had all three of them, I decided to go back to school. But that was, I ended up dropping all my classes because, like, no, it was too much. It was too much at that time. So again, I had never given up. Like, I knew I was going to go back, but it was just a matter of when. And so, I mean, I was substituting for a long time within the district, just on my own time when I could pick up jobs. And then I was working other jobs. Like, I've had an array of different jobs, right? So finally, once they got to an age where I could leave them home alone, because that was another thing, you know, like having to burden anybody or ask anybody to watch them after school while I went to school wasn't going to be an ideal situation for me. So once they got to an age where I was able to leave them home alone after school, it was like that. Like, I'd go to work, I'd take them to school, go to work, go pick them up off, you know, when I got off, drop them off at the apartment, and then go to A&M. Right. Like, and so they would stay home while I went to school, but my school was like down the street from my apartment at that time. And then, yeah, come home. And so eventually when I went back to school in 2017, I was like, that's it. I'm not going to stop anymore. Like, I'm going to actually fully go through with it because enough's enough. I like, it's been a long time. I had been putting it off, and it just was the time. And I actually did it. And I wanted my kids to be proud of me too. So all that to say that a lot of the stuff that I learned about teaching and the social emotional things and all the things that I'm like, man, I wish I had known when my kids were little, when it would have made a bigger impact knowing those things, that I could have done certain things differently. Not to say that, I mean, things were horrible. I'm not, but just so many different things where I'm like, dang, I wish I would have, you know, this or that. And my kids are just very different from me, which is that this is a conversation I've had with another friend of mine. Like, if we were such go-getters and such like, I want to be the best and I got to be in this, participate in all these things and make straight A's and stuff. And my kids just don't have that drive. And I don't know if it's the generation. I don't know if it started with COVID, because I think that is about the time where they started like, school's not that big of a deal. Mom. You know, I'm like, yeah, it is.
I'm sure you know now, well, I work for a school district. So like, I'm seeing a lot of that with kids, like school is nothing to them. Or I just feel like, well, because, you know, growing up in high school, like going to college was like the most important thing, get a degree for work, you know. And nowadays it feels like a bachelor's degree isn't very much these days, you know. But hats off to anyone who got their bachelor's degree or any kind of degree. Like, that's an amazing accomplishment. But still, like, to this nowadays, it's now everyone wants to be a streamer, or now everyone wants to be, you know, content creator, or, you know, TikTok, social media. But like, yeah, kids are, it's different. Like, I feel like the circumstances have changed a lot in the past couple of years.
Well, they definitely have. And
I thought you were going to go a different route.
Oh,
because I was going to jump in and ask if your kids have ever said a comment like, it seems like you care more about your students than you do about me. Hmm. Oh, God, no.
Oh, yeah. Yes, for sure. I know, and it hurts. It punches me in the heart, you know, because I'm like, are you kidding me? I see why they say it. Don't get me wrong. I do see why they say it. And that's something that I got to work on myself, you know, like making sure that my kids know, you know, like, clearly I don't care more about my students than I do you guys. I do care about my students. Right. And what's hard is because it's part of my job. Like, it isn't just a matter of like, these are just some random kids in my life that I love for no reason. You know, it isn't, it's part of my job, everything I do, you know. And then it's just a part, like, I have to also take it with a grain of salt, because I feel like my kids sometimes just say things sometimes just to say it, like just to throw the comment out there because they're upset in the moment, but then we'll later come back and be like, well, yeah, I know you love us, or I know you care about us, or you know what I mean? Okay. So they just kind of say the things out of maybe frustration or anger in the moment. Cause my kids don't go without any.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like neglecting them. I mean, they probably, I want to say they say it when I like buy my students ice cream, because, or like I buy my students like snacks and stuff. And so then they're like, but you didn't buy us any. You care about your students more than me. You know, like,
gotcha.
You know, you're just being petty.
Okay. Well, so it's when you're like spoiling your student, or, you know, quote unquote, like spoiling your student, so to speak. But I'm sure. Yeah.
That also kind of,
no, but
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Where it is, though, where I do know that it's the problem is the time, because I know that was something we were going to get into, but teaching is so draining. If you talk to like anybody who's a teacher, it's exhausting, right? Because you're up basically like performing all day, right? You're in front of your class all day, just like lecturing out and being this other persona, and having to make like, I don't know. I think they said teachers make like 1,500 decisions within, I don't remember what the time frame is, something you could look up. And I'm just like, yeah, it is. It feels like that. So when I come home, I am very much like, do we need to do this right now? Do we have to talk about this right now? Can it, this, can I just like, I need to just decompress and unwind. And that's like, I don't have it anymore for them, and that's where I'm. That's what
introvert. I knew it.
That's the
introvert. I swear, no, because extrovert get their energy from people. So, like,
but well, she's that, on all day.
Yeah,
introvert.
That's what I told Jennifer. That's what I told Jennifer. And again, this is going to have to be a whole nother episode. But because yes, I told her I do consider myself an extrovert. But because usually I am energized, like when I go out to places and I'm getting that attention and I'm being, you know, fun bev or whatever, then I am energized by it. But I'm overstimulated as a teacher, way overstimulated. It is all day, and there is never a quiet moment. I mean, sometimes those ice creams and the things I say I buy for my students is because they're incentives to behave. They're incentives to do your work. They're incentives to just show up. So,
yeah, whatever it takes, man. Survival.
For real.
Yeah.
Wow.
It isn't about like, oh, I just love them. It's like, this is my godsend. I need it. But
so then you're teaching. So, you're in a class. You're on all day. You're making 1,500 decisions within an hour or whatever it is. And then once that day is done, you come home to your children that have their own personal needs. And on top of that, like, yeah, there's the dinner, the shopping, the whatever, and finding time to create your lesson plan for the next day or the next week or however that works, and grade papers. Like,
Well, there's work-life balance. Like, what's your work-life balance? That's pretty much pretty good.
And that's the messed up part about being a teacher, because when we talk about work-life balance, right, any other profession, anything that you, most professions, right, because I don't want to lump them all in there, but most professions, you, whatever you have at work, you have your 8 hours or whatever your shift is, you get as much done as you can, and whatever doesn't get done, you save it for tomorrow, and you can come home and do the things you need to do and not bring work home with you. But as a teacher, everything else that you have to do, you have to do it on your own time. Grading, lesson planning, everything. Because even though we get, you know, like a 45-minute planning conference period every day, every Friday it's a meeting. Mm-hmm. If we have any type of other meeting, like a conference with parents or like ARDS or, you know, like meetings for special education or anything else, right? That's being taken up. If we have to like make copies, that's being taken up. Like that 45 minutes goes by in a snap.
I'm sure.
And so there is no way I'm going to get my lesson plans and my grading and everything done in that time. So yeah, I got to bring it home and it sucks. And so when I first started teaching, oh my God, I was spending a lot of time on that stuff at home, a lot. And like the veteran teachers would be like, stop, it's okay. It's going to be there tomorrow. You're never going to catch up. You're never going to be able to do it all. Yeah. And now I'm like, yeah, it didn't matter. My first 2 years, my kids would walk over from the high school to my campus because my campus was close enough where they could walk. And they would fall asleep in my little library area. First, they would eat all my snacks. And then they'd fall asleep in my library area while I did all those things, while I lesson planned and prepped and cleaned up my room and did all the things. And then we'd be going home like 6 o'clock. And school gets out at 3:40. Mm-hmm. So it's like all that extra time was being spent. But slowly but surely, because even staying all those hours, it was always behind. No matter what, it didn't matter. And the better of a job you do doesn't get recognized anymore, or you don't get paid anymore, or you know, nothing. There's no, you know, it just made me feel a slightly bit prepared to where I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that this anymore. I'm not. I'm going to just what I can do here at school. And then I bring things home, but just not as much. I try not to.
You've kind of figured out that discipline and learned to let go.
Yeah.
I've learned to let go because it frustrates me because of my type A. I lean more towards type A. I'm not going to say I'm a full-on type A, but wanting that organization and being prepared, it hurts, right? Like when I sometimes walk in on a Monday morning, I didn't do lesson plans this week. Do I have an idea? I know what I'm going to teach. I do. It's not like I'm just going in there like, oh, willy-nilly, we're just not going to do nothing. We're watching movies today, right? Like we can't do that. But just not the full on prepared and all the things I was supposed to do didn't get done. I'm constantly just firing under deadlines. Like, oh shoot, grades are due Friday. You know, let me go do them.
Now is that like,
and Vanessa,
is that pressure from your superiors, or is that pressure from parents, or like, or a mixture of both, or is it pressure on yourself? All three.
The pressure for certain things that are due is coming from administrators, right? Like grades are due by a certain day because then they are going to be let out to the parents. I can't say that I get pressure from the parents because I'm going to just be 100% honest with you. Like this year, when we're in March, I've had one parent reach out to me to ask how their kid is doing. Just one. Isn't that crazy? Wow. Fourth grade. Yeah. And so I don't even think parents are looking at report cards. Most of them, I'm going to say, aren't even worried about report cards. So I'm not stressing about that the parents are going to be on me, but it is a deadline. Like the system can't send the grades out if they're not there, if I don't put them in. So it's more like administrators on me about it.
Yeah. And you just said the word system, and then, you know, you're talking about like a computer system that you input grades into and it sends it out. But at the same time, you're a part of this system, the education system, right? So a lot of like the curriculum or whatnot follows, and everybody's just prepping for these state tests because these tests are so important. Because what? Because the funding for schools is affected by how well these kids do on those tests.
Right. And that's crazy. It's crazy. Why is our funding being based on how they do on these tests when, think about it, and this is, yeah, I'm sure some parents know, but maybe most people don't know, right? Like, every kid, what we're taught as teachers, right? Every kid is coming with a different background. They're coming with different background knowledge, right? They're coming with just all different levels. You have kids that are GT. You have kids that are special education. You have kids that speech, kids that have dyslexia, and everything in between, right? So in our classrooms, the way we're taught to teach, and it's crazy because we're given, you know, 20-something kids in some districts, even more than that, that we have to modify, but like accommodate, right, for each individual kid, like we got to meet them where they're at and then scaffold and bring up, like bring them up from there. And so some kids have, unless they're in education, I mean, sorry, unless they are in special education where they have an actual IEP, which is an individual education plan, that is something is written in their plan. Like for the test, they need, you know, text to speech or
extra time
to have it read to them, extra time, things like that. They're not going to get that on the test. Okay. So that's one thing. Now, also in my classroom, right? I have kids that can write sentences. I'm talking fourth grade. Okay. Write sentences correctly with all the punctuation, capitalization, all the conventions, everything. And then I have kids that for the life of them, they can put a sentence together, right? But it's not correct. It's not like, I mean, it's first grade almost work. Right? I have a good chunk of my kids reading at second grade level and they're in fourth grade. Now, mind you, this particular class was the kids that went home the year COVID happened in 2020. They were in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So they went home spring break and didn't come back there. Yes. And you know, kids were not logging on and there was all this grace that was given to them. Understandably, there should have been, right? Like we didn't know what the heck was going on at that point. But come September or August 2021 already at this point? So 2020 still. August of 2020. When we did come back to school, we were expected, the teachers were expected to come back to school, but the kids could be virtual. And any kid that did come back to school, we had to have their desk like the 6 feet apart or whatever. So we still had a lot of kids virtual. And that's when I started teaching. Wow. I was hybrid. Like I graduated school with my bachelor's in 2020. So I didn't even get to walk the stage or anything. Like I was waiting to have that proud moment with my kids. And I didn't even get that because of COVID. But so yeah, I came into teaching where I had a few students in my classroom and then the rest online. So I had to teach at my desk, like with a computer, looking online, looking at all the screens and then looking at them. And so imagine being in first grade and you're trying to learn how to read through a computer. Like, you know, they're not picking that up. First grade is the most foundational grade. Like that is, if you don't catch all the things that you need to catch like in first grade, it's very hard to catch up after that. And usually by third grade is when, if you're not reading on grade level by third grade, I don't know if you guys knew that's how they figure the amount of gels that they're going to need in an area.
What?
They go based off of third grade scores. If however many kids are not reading on grade level by the third grade, that's how many gel cells they know they need in that area. That's crazy, right?
What are you looking
for? It is. It's freaking...
It's Texas.
No, but this is all Laurel.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Like, you can look up. Yeah. So anyway, so this particular batch of kids, this fourth graders, were those kids that were online for probably a lot of them were online for half of kinder, all of first, and half a second.
Wow.
Online. So you know that's why they're so behind, right? But do they give a crap? Does the state care? No. We're still going to take STAR. We're still going to get tested on grade level. They have to take the fourth grade level test. And so in my classroom throughout the whole year, as I teach, right, I meet the kids where they're at. So like one student, I'm super happy if I can get them to so right now they changed the STAR format, right? You remember how when we took this test, we had our reading test, but then another test was a writing test. They were separate.
Uh-huh.
Well, they combined them. So now they're taking their reading test and then some questions they actually have to write in. So I'm over here teaching the strategies of like how this needs to look, right? Mm-hmm. So again, teaching to the test, which I freaking hate. I'm super happy. It is an accomplishment if I can get a certain group of kids to just do the first two pieces of the strategy, which is restating the question and answering. Forget finding your evidence. Mm-hmm. forget explaining, forget having a summary and a conclusion or any of that stuff, right? Just doing those two pieces is an accomplishment, wow. right? So in my grade, when I grade them based on that. Were they able to at least do this? Oh, okay, I'm going to give them, you know, something passing.
Yeah.
Now, the STAR test ain't going to do that. The STAR test is all the same exact test for all of the kids. And they can't, they're not all performing at the same level, but they're all got to take the same test. Like, it's crazy. And then we get funded.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Grants, yeah. money, Stupid. Money for the school district.
Well, and then never mind, like, sure, you have the kids on the IEPs and whatnot. And then there are the other kids, like, I mean, I was in GT, but I got to tell you, horrible test taker. I mean, I did well enough to show that, like, in third grade, I read at a ninth grade level. I remember that. Or maybe it was second grade or whatever, whenever it was that they tested. And I was like, oh, wow, that's Dude, cool. It didn't mean anything to me.
I was, like, in seventh grade, third grade math level. I was so bad. I have dyslexia.
GT dyslexia.
but you know, it's crazy. There's GT kids with dyslexia.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, imagine that, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. But all that to say, like, I'm sure there's kids out there, you know, that have that anxiety around tests. Like, they don't know what it is, right? But where you just get nervous and forget everything when you take a test.
Yes. So there's that, right? Because I will tell you, my school district has tested these poor kids, my fourth graders, like 13 times already. We took benchmarks. We took district common assessments. We took STAR interim practice. And then the fourth graders had an additional test to help, like, the TEA. It's kind of like a rollout to see what questions that they were going to use on this upcoming STAR. Which we don't even get the feedback for that particular test, right? We don't get the feedback. But even with all the other tests, so what we have to do is we have to look at the data, right? And then see, okay, well, these questions, so many of these kids missed it. And so it's all about the data, I'm putting my air quotes, the data. But, oh my God, we just took a test 3 weeks ago. What did you want me to change or accomplish within those 3 weeks that we're taking another test? It's stupid. So at this point, the kids are so burnt out and they're so tired of even testing that I'll tell you, I had a girl straight up tell me, I didn't even read the passage. I just went and looked for, because one of the questions was about the San Antonio or the Edwards Aquifer. Uh-huh. She said, I just went and looked, scanned the passage for the Edwards Aquifer and wrote down the first sentence that I saw in her for her writing piece of it. Gosh. Because I was like, when I questioned her, I was like, what is this? What is this? I know you know how to do it. Like, I know you know how to write. What is this? Why did you just, she's over it. Her sentence literally was copied right out of the passage. And she straight up told me, I didn't even read it.
Yeah.
And then I have other kids falling asleep. Yeah. I have other kids so ADHD to the max. Can't even focus during this test. Yeah. Testing.
Burnt out on tests. And then on top of that, you've got whatever fire drills. And then, of course, let's not forget the school shooting trainings. Like, how often do you guys have to do those? Like,
the lockdown drills and stuff?
Yeah. Lockdown drills.
We have, they're called lockdown drills. So we have drills for all types of things, but specific lockdown drills are like fire drills. I want to say it's like once a month we have at least one kind of drill, but we have two safety weeks throughout the school year, one in the beginning and then one more towards the end, that we do all of the drills within 1 week.
Wow.
So there's like secure, like in case there's like a severe weather, there's the lockdown drill in case there's a shooting, there's the fire drill. In case there's also one, like in case there's any hazardous stuff in the air nearby, like if there's a hazard spill or something nearby, there's several different ones. So we have to practice them all within the week during safety week.
Jeez. And how close is safety week to like testing? I'm just curious.
It's not too close. I want to say we just had our safety week like a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Which I guess then, no, they kind of make sense because we had our practice testing around that time. Because it feel, man, February, there was a 3 week straight where we had three different tests. Different. And each week we were testing. I was like, oh my God, it's ridiculous. So now at this point, right, because the kids are so burnt out and they're not even performing, like they don't care. The data means nothing, right? If she didn't read the passage and she didn't take it seriously, she guessed at the questions. What does that tell me as far, what can I look at the data and say she knows this or she doesn't know this? I can't.
Right.
I can't. But they still tell us, you've got to look at the data. Why are they missing these questions? Why are they, what are you not doing? Or are you not making your lessons engaging enough? Everything's our fault.
Right.
Which going back to the test, when you said some of the kids are nervous, right? They get anxiety around tests, right? So they're not going to perform. They could be smart, so smart and so capable of things and then bomb this test, right? But also think about this. You know how they talk about bias, that the standardized tests are biased, and why they say that is because not everybody comes in with the same background knowledge, right? So if there's something on the test that they ask about, you know, I don't know, off the top of my head, so something that maybe a whole section of kids have never experienced before, right? Because they live in poverty or because that's just not their
true
or whatever, right? So these kids are coming in without the background knowledge as well for some of these questions. They've never heard of it. They've never been exposed to those things. So when they're reading it, I mean, even if they can't read it, first off, because they're already behind in their reading. So that's a struggle, right? Just being able to know how to read the passage. Mm-hmm. And then even if they are the best of readers, they've never experienced, you know, some kind of Indian powwow, whatever. Let's say the article is about that. You don't know about an Indian powwow or the type of celebrations or that culture has or whatever. Then how can you about like the question is asking you, well, how are these two cultures alike or blah, blah, blah. Like what? Like the kids, their minds can't even go there. And they want us, they need to be there, right? Like that's where they want, that's what they consider they're on grade level. But it's crazy when you have kids who all they do all day long is they're just on their iPads playing video games. They've never been outside of San Antonio.
Yeah.
Where are they getting this background knowledge?
Right. Where are they experiencing culture? Yeah. Outside of their home.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your,
exactly.
Speaking of iPads and stuff like technology, what's your opinion on bringing in technology in the school classroom?
It's mixed, right? Because I do like having certain things that we are putting in the classroom. I do like that every student of mine has a Chromebook in class, right? I don't let them take it home just because their age and
may break them
because they don't take care of them. That's one. They forget to bring them, or they bring them and they're not charged. Like there's so much stuff where I'm like, no, I'm here every day when we go home. The kids kind of we put them on the charger and we stack them or whatever.
They come back with cockroaches.
Yeah, cockroaches. We.
Oh God.
I feel so bad for like some of these kids, man, like their living situations and, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a lot. There's so many different situations where I'm like, I don't even want to deal with that. So I have the kids
stack them up and charge them.
Adam, you would be like, oh my God, I love this teacher because I am on it with my technology. Good. Like everybody comes in and they're like, I love the way I make these little crates and I zip tied all the chargers to the very like top of the crate. My God. And so they slide the Chromebook in and plug the charger in piece too, because these kids plug them in backwards. They're putting them, they're pulling the cords. Like I'm just like, just stack them. I'll put them on the charger.
we have iPad carts and Chromebook carts and all that. And we have to assemble them. We have to cable them. We secure them. We make sure. Yeah, we have one in like every classroom. And yeah, I mean, you know, during COVID, kids used to take their technology at home and forget it, break it, like you said, and they wouldn't like be able to do their homework and stuff. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Even without them taking it home, I've had two kids pull keys like off their keyboard, and I have to put in, you know, work orders for it. I'm like, how did you do that? Like, what happened? What do you
know? Some kids are artists. Like, they'll paint their cases, they'll tag them, they'll put stickers.
It doesn't even belong to them. Put stickers. Oh no, I get after my kids. So I'm like, this isn't yours. Why are you putting a sticker on? Is it yours? Do I go to your house and put stickers on it? I'm on it now.
Okay, so with your kids, like, how are you with technology? Like you said, like, you give your kids snacks and they behave. Like, is technology like one of those things for you and your children, or like, is it a privilege
to give their students to incentivize
to my students or my personal?
Well, kids? To your personal kids. I'm sorry.
Your kids at home.
So for my kids at home, I never bought them, or they didn't have cell phones until middle school. So that was one thing that I was like, no, what do you need a cell phone for in elementary? You're with me all the time. You know, like, I know where you're at all times. You don't need a phone. I think it was in the like higher grades, once they got to like fourth grade, that I even purchased like those Kindle Fires or whatever, like such cheapo-deepo tablets that my kids were even able to get on technology, which was fine. Again, I didn't feel like they needed it. And sometimes I wish that I didn't even get them a phone at all, if I'm being honest, right? Like, that's one of the things I'd go back and do differently if I could. And I tell any friends of mine that are just now starting off with having children, don't give them a phone. Because it's scary, just all the things they can access and the things I've caught my kids, my own personal kids, accessing. And then I also had to balance that out, right? Like, what's natural? Like, they did this because they're curious, or, you know, whatever. But then I also had to teach them the realities of like predators and what's safe to be on and not be on, and what's safe to post and not post. And I think they do pretty well with that. But do I give them any type of like reward? Or, I mean, they were already in middle school by the time they even had any of that, so I don't, that kind of got skipped over. But had it been around more, so let me just tell you, my kids are 19, 17, and 16. Oh, so okay. It makes a difference. They're already older. But had technology been a little bit more the way it is now when they were younger, because I think social media and stuff was just kind of starting as they were young. I definitely would make sure now, seeing the way things are today, I wouldn't have let my kids, like, I wish kids just didn't have that.
Yeah,
I don't, it's so hard to
say that. And there's, because it just like opens up so many, whether it's your students or your kids at home, there's just so many more platforms or avenues that a kid could potentially be bullied. Mm. I mean, that's what comes to my mind.
But definitely. And that was one of the, I had that with my daughter. She's like, I posted a video. It was back, I think, before TikTok was even TikTok. It was like Musical.ly.
Oh, yeah.
And it was more a kid thing, if you guys remember back then. But yeah, she had a Musical.ly that she had posted a video on, and one of the girls at her school had made some comment on it. And I was like, Cameron, if you like it, delete her comment, block her as a friend. Like, that's it. That's as simple as it can be. Don't let what she said take it to heart. She's probably jealous. You know, you had the whole mom talk about it. But then, no, it was one of those, I had to end up going to the principal and sending him screenshots of the things that the girl wrote, and then officially making my kid like, no, you're got to block all of this, because I'm not going to hear you crying and taking this all personal when, hello, you put the video out there, then you have to be open to what people are going to say about it. So you had to learn that lesson. Mm. And then also, now that it happened, what are you going to do about it? How are we going to, what's the lesson now once the bullying started? But I nipped it in the bud right away, right? And now my daughter knows. Hmm. that, you know, she's not going to let people do it, you know, attack her online. But what about the kids that don't do it? What about the kids whose parents don't know
what's
happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. So kids can get bullied at school. They can get bullied on the way home or to and from school, whatever. And then they can get bullied online. So it's like, you know, all these.
I never stop.
Bad news.
That's what sucks about the technology, especially through the teen years. It never stops. Mm-hmm. So like when we were growing up, if we had a problem at school, or we had girls at school that didn't like us or bullying or anything, right? We got to come home and not worry about it, not deal with them, not see them until tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But here you're coming to home and it's in your face. It's in your hand. It's in your pocket. And then you're obsessed, right? Even us as adults, right? We're constantly looking at social media. And even though I'm not necessarily posting anything, I'm looking at TikToks. I'm looking at, you know, other Instagram or whatever. And I see the other adults who are my age posting like it's their job, right? Like they're getting paid to do
it. You're going to have to start doing that, ma'am, because...
Get used to it.
Yeah, because you're going to have to start talking about your book and promoting that and everything. So just remember everything.
Oh, yeah. I'm not opposed to that, but I'm talking about like just putting the nonsense out there.
Their whole life. And, who cares?
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, Beverly...
So it's hard.
Yeah, it sounds... like a lot, and somehow you're managing it. And going back to the beginning of the conversation, I mean, I just really applaud you for, you know, being able to be as vulnerable as you were and are with us in this conversation, but also at home and to, you know, in the work that you do in showing up for your students the way that Miss Escobar was it? Or
Escobedo,
like showed up for you. Like I love that. And definitely it sounds like you're doing what you were put on this earth for. So like kudos to you for like not giving up and being, you know, becoming a mom and still like pursuing what it is that you wanted to do. And you're absolutely right. It's like your kids are watching. Right. So they saw you. Sure, you took a pause, whatever, but you continued and you saw it through. And they're watching you as the teacher that you are, as the mom that you are, and now as the children's book author that you're, you know, stepping into as well. So, wow, Beverly, I'm so glad that we were able to connect and that, that we have that history and, you know, we're working on this new thing together as well.
Yeah, shout out to all the teachers.
I know. Oh, definitely. Thank you. And I'm excited. I'm excited to be working with you. And who would have thought, right? I mean, I'm sure at our age we thought we were gonna be famous. I was gonna graduate high school and join the Groundlings and get on SNL and you know those big dreams.
SNL dreams. But... Not me, but
no, that was my dream, but who knows? You never know, you know, where like I always wanted to write a children's book, right? Just like I had always wanted to be a teacher. So it's crazy that now it's happening.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it wasn't something, and I'm so glad that you've given me that pathway and avenue in which to do so.
Well, and
so thank
and,
you.
But and as an educator, right, you're constantly saying like you can do anything and like you're living proof. So I'm so excited for, you know, you to have your book in hand and to show the kids like you really can do anything. I did.
I know. I can't wait for that. I cannot wait. You know, even just telling them, so many of them are like, they want to illustrate it for me.
Aww.
Like they want to be part of it. And I'm so like, I want to have it in hand to be like, look, you can do this.
Aww. Well, and maybe we can, I mean, we'll have to have a different conversation on the phone about if they do contribute some drawings and maybe that can be part of like your illustrations or something like in the background. I don't know, but don't get my wheels turning. Because then we go off the rails and then people are like, your podcast is all over the place.
Who's going to pay for that? Yeah.
But anyway, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And for those of you listening, if you do want to connect with Beverly, if you're a teacher too, and you know, want to discuss the challenges around teaching or figuring out that work-life balance, you can connect with her on her Instagram, which is at Bevlow. So it's B-E-V as in Victor, and then L-O-W. You can find me on Instagram at Jenny's underscore pennies.
And I'm at DJ Adam Herrera.
And until next time, and Beverly, now I see you. So I'm going to tell you, as you always hear me say, your voice matters. You are capable. You are lovable. You are deserving. You are enough.
Yay.